Being an entrepreneur, it's not for the weak at all. I had to find worthiness in stepping out of my comfort zone and even deciding to launch something that I didn't even have any experience with.
Her name is Alicia Scott,
the founder of Range Beauty.
Being on a platform like Shark Tank,
Range Beauty.
I think you're going to find a better partner here. So I'm out.
But I'm out.
I'm out.
And then to have Emma invest.
It feels to me like a premium product.
We think that we'd like to make you an offer.
She's a powerhouse. People love to say beauty is so overcrowded, it's so oversaturated. You absolutely have to find something that no one else is doing that makes someone see you on the shelf next to other brands and they're reaching for you.
Before we dive in, I want to extend a warm invitation to join our thriving founder community. It's the perfect place to discover more insightful interviews aimed at helping you build, grow, and scale your business. So don't forget to hit subscribe. Your support means the absolute world to us. Thank you so much for subscribing. Let's get stuck in today's discussion.
Hear the stories, learn the proven methods, and accelerate your growth and future through entrepreneurship. Welcome to the Founder Podcast with Nathan Chan.
Thank you so much for joining us, Alicia. The first question that I ask is, what did the first 60 days of business look like for you?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk about everything. So for me, it's a little bit of a unique journey. So my first 60 days, I was still working a 9-to-5 that had nothing to do with my background. It was just enough to pay my bills, my personal bills, and any bills for the business. And so the first 60 days, honestly, were just me building our social media platform. So it took a little bit before I actually had physical products, but I wanted to make sure our presence was felt. I wanted to make sure I was communicating with people who I thought would be our audience members. So it was a lot of digging on social media. It was a lot of social listening. It was doing a lot of research. And so I would say our first product didn't come until probably 3 months into us having our social media up and running.
Yeah. And you started like with $150 to get your first order. Like talk me through that, how that came about, how you brought the product to life, because I know that a lot of people, when they want to start a beauty brand, they think you have to place this big minimum order quantity. Like, talk us through how you funded it and brought it to life, because you bootstrapped it for quite some time.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really great call out. And that was something that was key for me. So because I worked in fashion and I was in sales, I was very familiar with minimum order quantities. I was very familiar with margins. I was very familiar with that side of the business, just not beauty specifically. And so for me, I knew I needed to find a manufacturer and a lab all in one. I didn't want to try and figure out how to get this over to here and all of that initially. And so I went onto this website. It's called cosmeticindex.com. I don't even know if it's still around, because this was initially when I first had the idea back in 2015, when I actually started researching. So I went on this website after a Google search. And it was this like yellow book for, I don't know, like yellow pages for anything you would need within the cosmetics industry, manufacturers, packaging, if you're trying to hire team. And so I went through their manufacturer database and I had my list of absolutely what I have to have and what I'm not bending on. And so for me, I knew I needed this to be a clean ingredients line. I needed it to be someone who could honor me not having, you know, a large amount of capital to deal with big MOQs, that was okay with me starting small and building with them. They needed to be US-based in case I needed to get to them, and they needed to understand and grasp what I was building. So saying that I want to do skincare-infused makeup back in 2015 when that wasn't, you know, now it's so popular, but that wasn't the norm then. And so I dated. I found a list. I think it started off with maybe 10 manufacturers and I got it down to 4. And then I got those 4 down to 1. And I went with this woman-owned manufacturer here in the US. And I loved them because your first run with them was $150. You just have to spend $150. And so with that, I was able to get formula. I was able to get the base, like pigment. I was able to get toners. I was able to get different ingredients if I wanted hydrating, mattifying, all of this. Beakers, test, like my own mini lab, basically, with $50.
That's crazy. And so how'd you get your first sale off the back? Like, talk us through that, like, because I think people would really like to understand that detail.
Yes. So as I mentioned, we had our social up and running. And it's funny because initially the entire theme, the name was completely different. So we were originally called Skinny Dip Cosmetics because I loved the idea, like skinny dipping, you're at your freest moment, right? And so that's how I wanted you to feel. Even though it's makeup, I still wanted you to feel free. I wanted your skin to feel free as if you weren't wearing anything, like skinny dipping. And so that was our initial name. And, you know, we were very quote unquote girly. So lots of pinks and glittery and all of that. And our first initial order came under that name. And it came when we added our website to our social media. So I had a landing page with a wait list. And so once the page went live, those people who were on the wait list were notified. And so and we were also hosted on Squarespace initially. So our first order came through Squarespace. And we operated under Skinny Dip. I believe I maintained it live for a month before I was sent a cease and desist by what's called Skinny Dip. It's a company out of London. And they actually started off with phone accessories. And then they went into fashion, I believe. And then they launched their own makeup line. And they emailed me and my little self. They emailed me and said, hey, you're infringing on our trademark. So we can go to court or you can shut down. And I realized, oh my gosh, like I'm so small. I didn't even, it's fine. So I shut down. And that's what led me back to the drawing board and how Range was actually born.
So this is an interesting experience because I had something similar happen to me in the early days founder. So when I started founder, it wasn't called founder. It was called Key to Success magazine. And we were sued by a big business magazine out of the States, one of the biggest ones. And for trademark infringement, they didn't send us a cease and desist though. They lodged, proceedings. So I got a FedEx package basically saying that I needed to appear in Dallas, Texas on this date for trademark infringement. And this was the first 4 months of starting Founder. And I remember waking up in the morning and receiving that letter and being like, oh my God, and just like was so scared. And I'm like, I remember speaking to my mentor at the time and I said, I'm so scared. And he's like, do you have any money? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, because I was scared I was going to go bankrupt. And he's like, well, do you have any money? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, what does it matter then? And yeah, it's a scary feeling, right?
It was scary because I remember getting it and I do recall ignoring it at first because I'm like, that's no. And back then I did, obviously it was my error not, I filed for my LLC, but I didn't look up to see, okay, is this trademarked? And then I was thinking, well, I spell it this way and you spell it that way and I'm doing this and you're still, then I can't be infringing. And they kept sending emails and said, okay, we can take this to court. And I remember I sent off an email, I'm like, you know, I'm a small business. I'm just getting started, you know, for you to come at me this way. But, you know, it was fine. I think I was fortunate where at the time I was hand labeling bottles. So I didn't do a run where, let's say, I had bottles printed with the name, but at the time I did have boxes. I had outer packaging with the name that just went to waste. Obviously the website, our social media, like going through the process of changing everything, but it was scary. And at the same time, it made me feel, am I doing something that landed me on your radar enough where I have barely launched our, so at the time our social media was very much buzzing, I will say. But it did give me that little, what did I do that would land my small brand on your lard? Because they were sold in Topshop. They were sold, you know, in all these different stores in the US as well as their UK presence. But it did make me feel like, okay, there must be something that you feel a little threatened by, maybe. So,
yeah, no, that's awesome. And I don't know about you, but my experience was it was a blessing in disguise, because then that's how I got the name Founder, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. It was absolutely a blessing in disguise, because even at the time, our tagline was Clean Beauty for the Forgotten Shades. And I was nervous to really push our story of being for acne and eczema prone skin, because, you know, we're in an industry where flawless skin is pushed, and we're in an industry where conventionally pretty is pushed. And so even though it was our benefit and everything, I was just like, oh, let's focus on being clean beauty. Let's focus on saying we prioritize deeper skin tones. But it absolutely was a blessing in disguise, because Range Beauty, like coming up with that name, the whole rebrand that we did, like our packaging now and our branding now and our messaging now, we needed that to happen.
Mm. Yeah, it's such a great story. Thank you for sharing. Just lastly on that, did you ever think about giving up when all of that happened?
No, I think that was another blessing, was that, you know, God forbid, I was 5 years in under Skinny Dip and they sent me that, you know, for them to send it. And I honestly, like I say, I believe it was 1 to 2 months. It was very shortly after we launched. And even though I was upset about the waste of money again on the outer packaging and things like that, it wasn't a large run though. So it wasn't, oh my gosh, I have thousands and thousands and thousands of things with Skinny Dip on it that I now have to discard. It was definitely still like, oh, I hate that I had to waste my money and I can't use these things. But for it to be so early on, that was where I was fortunate.
Mm, yeah, no, thanks for sharing. So I have to talk about your pitch on Shark Tank. So you've been on Shark Tank America, and we've interviewed Emma Greed, and she actually invested in Range. Can you tell us what you've learned from her and the experience being on Shark Tank? Did it make a massive difference to sales? Talk us through that whole journey.
Oh, yeah. I mean, being on a platform like Shark Tank, especially as an indie brand, is so invaluable. You can't pay for that level of marketing, right? Especially for us, like I said, we prioritize melanin-rich skin, although we're inclusive of all skin tones. But being able to face that demographic, which was completely new for us, and receiving, I guess, the feedback that we did, where all of the sharks loved what we were creating. There were just sharks who were like, I think there's a better shark here for you. No one had anything negative to say. No one downplayed what I've built. And so it was very validating. And then to have Emma invest, I mean, you know, like her marketing mind, she's a powerhouse. And she's used to being in an industry with fashion and having to push inclusivity, you know, with Good American, and having to also teeter that line with skins of like what's been accepted and what shouldn't be accepted, and having to voice her opinion about that, and having to show up in rooms where people think that she shouldn't be. So having someone like that on my cap table it's incredible, especially for a brand my size.
Mm. And when it went live, tell me through like what happened.
Yes. And so we filmed Shark Tank. That was July of 2021. And my episode did not air until the end of February of 2022. So it was a lot of like, you know, and they tell you along the way, they tell you, hey, there's no promise or guarantee that your episode's going to air. And so the whole time you're just waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting and waiting until you get the notification. They let you know, I think we had 3 weeks, 4 weeks maybe to prepare. And so you're using that time to prepare your inventory, to prepare your customer service, to prepare your social media. You're brushing. 3 weeks goes by so quickly. And the night of, we did a watch party and we were surrounded by family and friends, and we had all the screens loaded up with, you know, the show. And we were the first to come out, which was incredible. And it was just crazy because you're actually out there. We talked to them for close to 2 hours and they cut it down to like, I think it's 10 minutes per pitch. But I was so I was so, so, so appreciative of like the edit that they gave us. I think they showcased us in such a great light. And the, you know, feedback and everything, the press and our social media and everything we received while it was airing and after it aired was amazing.
Yeah, that's exciting. And tell me, like, were you watching the Shopify, like all the people on the store? Like, what did it peak to? Can you share?
I can't share what it peaked to, but I have always shared. I'm like, we have sample kits, our foundation sample kits that we sell so that you can test your range and then find your actual specific shade. And I remember we sold 1,500 of those kits the night of, and that was the most that we ever sold. And one day, not even including, you know, our full size products. And I just remember watching the Shopify, and I had obviously other founder friends there. And so we're all looking on my phone and we're like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Just elated to see, like, for us, I mean, I will say, I think it was like what we would probably make in 6 months plus we made in that weekend.
Wow.
Yeah. Very, very... change the projection of range for sure.
Wow, that's crazy. So let's talk about the juicy stuff. For everyone watching, how do you start a beauty brand? So there's future founders that want to start a cosmetics business. Where's the best place to start?
Yeah, so I think the best place to start is figuring out what exactly is going to be so special about your brand. You know, people love to say beauty is so overcrowded, it's so oversaturated. The thing is you have to find your niche and then even try to niche down from that. It's not, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel, but you absolutely have to find something that no one else is doing. And you have to figure out how to market that in a unique way that makes someone see you on the shelf next to other brands and they're reaching for you. Whether it's your packaging, whether it's your messaging, whether it's the testimonials, the before and afters, like, what is sticking out about your benefits, about your claims that is not being seen across other brands? And then, so once you find your niche, you absolutely have to do your market research to back it up. It's one thing to say like, oh, I talked to five people and they said they would love to have, you know, a blush that does X, Y, and Z. It's like, no, we have to make sure you're really going to have that wait list, that you're going to have the demand there to say like, hey, this is something we truly need. So really making sure you have the market research to back up your niche.
Mm. And how do people work out what their niche is? Because it's scary, right, to know what it's got to be. You want to get it right. Are there any tips or advice that you would give from your experience to make sure you get it right or give you the best chance of success?
Yes, I think you will see, especially across a lot of indie founders, is that we typically start brands out of a problem we were trying to solve for ourselves or for a family member or for a friend. So for me specifically, I was never a makeup wearer. Like, I steered very clear from the makeup aisles, for one, because I never saw my skin tone represented. And then for two, because I was already dealing with cystic acne and eczema. And so being very fearful of what I put on my skin that would exacerbate a breakout or that would cause a flare up. So I said, okay, I'm having this issue. And then at the same time, I'm working in fashion where I'm seeing a lot of the black models are also dealing with the lack of shades and makeup options available for them. And I took it, I mean, that was my light bulb moment where I said, I don't see it. I want it. I think there are others who would want it. I'm talking to my family and my friends about it who are like, that's an incredible idea. I would love makeup that also helps my skin. And so that's what put my wheel in motion. And so sometimes it's just looking so close to home. Like, is there something that's going on in your daily life where you're saying, I wish I had A so that it would make this easier? Or are you hearing your friends talk about it? Or are you on social media seeing this reoccurring conversation about a problem and there's not a solution? So making sure that you're looking at yourself and then your community too.
Mm. And how did you know when you got it right? Like, at what point in time did you go, yep, I'm onto something? Because I remember even in the early days founder, like, I've never even talked about this. I remember one time, you know, I'd even gone full time on founder. We had at least a few thousand magazine subscribers. And I did a free call with this guy called Ramley from Canada. And he did like product market fit calls, like with founders just for free. And I was like, man, how do I know if I've hit product market fit? And he's like, well, how many customers do you have? I said, like, oh, we got a couple of thousand readers, like paid subscribers. And he's like, yeah, you've definitely hit product market fit. So I was constantly looking for that validation that I was onto something. And it was after that call, I was like, oh, okay, maybe I am onto something. And eventually it just clicked. When did it click for you that you'd got it right, that you were onto something?
I honestly had a few instances. So one major one was a makeup influencer took a picture from our Instagram. I think she did a screenshot and she tweeted it out. And she said, this is what you call range. And it was a aerial shot of our foundation shades like lined up that I had posted to our Instagram. And it went crazy. And so to see it for us, I think that kind of said, John, like these shades really are needed. And to see it equate to orders on the website, it was like, okay. Honestly, I would say, yeah, the volume of customers, once I saw, I'm like, okay, we're getting more than 5 orders a day consistently. That's pretty decent. But honestly, it was the testimonials themselves where I would say one that always sticks out to me that we received early on was a woman who said she went to her dermatologist for eczema, and her dermatologist said that you will not be able to wear makeup. You will never be able to wear makeup that won't cause you to break out even more. And she left us a testimonial saying she gave us a shot and she's had no issues with her skin with it. And seeing testimonials like that where people have been told they'll never be able to wear makeup or who feel they can't play in makeup and or use it to feel extra confident or whatever it is that they're using it for, to feel like they had to avoid that because the beauty industry overlooked them, to see that in writing was like, okay, this is very validating.
Hey guys, I really hope you're feeling inspired from today's interview. Now, the truth is, all successful e-commerce founders started from zero with a spark of an idea and a whole lot of determination. But let's be real, building or growing an e-commerce business is no walk in the park. And that's where Founder Plus comes in, which I'm really excited to share with you. It's a culmination of a decade worth of work at Founder. So if you're feeling stuck in your e-commerce business, you're lacking confidence to move forward, or you're worried about making costly mistakes or not knowing how to grow your business, Founder Plus is here to support you on your journey. You get access to a customized learning pathway with proven frameworks from successful e-commerce founders for fast results, incredible programs, a supportive community, weekly live mentorship, exclusive savings on startup tools, and 24/7 real human support. Try Founder Plus today for just $1 for 7 days so you can accelerate your business goals. Visit founder.com/start-trial or click the link in the description to claim your trial. All right, now let's jump back in the show. That's amazing. Yeah, look, it's funny you say that because I think you're looking for proof. You're looking for proof that this works. And if you can get one person to say, this works, this is amazing, this changed my life, this was transformational. If your product is transformational in some way, shape, or form, it's only a matter of time that you get enough proof to go, yes, this needs to exist. Yes, I need to get this into the hands of more people. So there was a transition though, and there was a build up. So in 2019, you went full time to pursue range and really get that business going. And the business went from $45,000 to $350,000. Talk us through that particular transition. Because I remember for me, I had another mentor challenge me. Founder was making, I think, similar numbers, like probably about 40, 50 grand a year. And I said to my mentor, you know, oh, look, I'm going to wait till I get to this, and then I'll feel ready and I'll have this much saved in the bank. I'll have 3 months worth of rent and, you know, whatnot saved in the bank. And he really challenged me and he said, Nathan, I think you should do it now. Like, I think you should shorten that cycle because the more time that you spend on your business than working in your day job, you'll actually compound it really quickly and you'll get faster growth. And he was right. But can you tell me the steps that you made to make that transition and your experiences there?
Yeah, I was the same way. I told myself, so I went into 2019 in January. I said, this is going to be my last year working here. And it was because things did start to pick up for me. I was also at this time winning like pitch competitions. I was able to rack up a few grants in 2019 to support Range and not only have to rely mostly on like my personal paycheck. But I also felt the same way. I'm like the energy that I was burning, it's like that whole thing, you're burning the candle at two ends where it's like I'm working my 9 to 5 and then I'm coming home. I take like an hour break and then the second half I'm working on this side hustle. And it was something I truly believed in. I saw the press we were receiving, the orders were coming in, the opportunities were coming in. And I remember going back and forth with my dad about it. And I remember my dad being like, so what if it doesn't work out? What, you're going to have to get a job again? And I was like, I mean, yeah, I guess like he's like, is that the worst thing that's going to come of you quitting your job and going all in on this? If it doesn't work out, you're going to have to go to work again, you know, and go to corporate again. And I was like, yeah. So I did set a number aside for what I wanted to put away for my personal, because I'm like, okay, let me at least make sure I have this amount of months covered for my rent, for my car, et cetera. And then let me make sure I have a little put away for Range. And I remember I walked into my boss's office in October of 2019. And she said something about the way the company was moving, like changing in a drastic way. And I remember saying to her, like, I actually have to quit. And she's like, you have to quit? I said, yes, I have to quit. And she asked me again. I said, yes, I have to quit. And I was like, I have to put in my notice. And she said, are you quitting today? Are you, you know, I had a really great relationship with my manager. And I told her, I was like, I would like to quit in December. I want December to be my last month, if that's okay. And she said, that's completely fine. And I think I needed to say it. I had to, there was no going back, even though from October to December, she was like, are you sure you don't want to? It's like, nope, nope. And I remember in December, I had a pop-up with Target. It was conflicting with days that I had to work. I couldn't get the days off. And it was so perfect that I gave my notice because I'm like, it's no longer my concern. And so I did that Target pop-up in December of 2019. That was my last month at my 9 to 5. And then January, I started in the Target Takeoff Beauty Accelerator, where they take you behind the scenes for 6 months to get you ready to launch at Target. And at the same time, while we're at headquarters for Target, they're announcing the pandemic. They're announcing COVID. They're like, you know, there's something going on with COVID. We're not really sure how serious this is, but, oh, you guys don't worry about it. Like, we'll keep you updated. And we flew. So this was in Minneapolis. I flew back to Atlanta. And shortly after, we had the shutdown. And I was like, well, isn't this a perfect time for me to go all in on my, like, to not have the backup of my 9 to 5 right now? But it was the perfect time because what was everyone doing? Shopping from home on their computers. And I went so hard on social, and that's when our sales blew up. And simultaneously, if we think about 2020, that was also when we saw the huge uproar of the Black Lives Matter movement. And again, what was everybody doing? Everybody was at home. For the first time, they were able to put their eyes on this movement and decide if they thought this was right or wrong and how they wanted to support. And there was a huge, huge call out to, hey, put your money where your mouth is and support these Black-owned brands. So on top of people already shopping from home, on top of makeup and beauty being, now we know, recession and pandemic proof, because no matter what's going on, people want to still look good. They want to feel good about themselves. We also have this outpouring of support for Black-owned brands and Black-owned beauty brands. I mean, so many of my founder friends skyrocketed in 2020. And so all of that, I mean, 2020, we were on Beyonce's website. In 2020, we were in Allure. We were in Cosmo. I was in Forbes. Like, everything was happening at once that just really shot up our traffic and our revenue.
Yeah, crazy. And so how do you get these opportunities, right? Like, you're really kind of taking it. You're on Shark Tank. You went for the Target Accelerator. I know, like, before this, you were talking offline. I think you guys, what's the other big retailer that you guys are working with right now? Because Sephora, there you go. Yeah, like, how do you get these opportunities? Like, what's the secret?
Honestly, it comes down to, like, your social is so important. I was first contacted by Target, by a buyer for Target, through my social media. When we had the opportunity for Shark Tank, it was because we were on the radar from someone who initially saw us on Instagram and then saw everything else that came to, you know, follow with us. So I would say your social presence, your personal social and your business social presence are both very important and key. And on top of that, I love telling our story. I love public speaking. I love pitching. If I could just do pitches every day, I probably would. So during this time, I was doing a lot of pitch and grant competitions for major partnerships like Visa, New York Fashion Week, Bumble for Business, Stacy's Pita Chips, Chase. Like, we are constantly applying and racking up this exposure through not only my platform, but of course, these brands were posting about us. They were doing press releases about us. We were getting picked up, like I said, by huge publications organically. And we had a few viral moments on social as well. So it was honestly a culmination of just making sure I had eyes on me. And that definitely converted into these major opportunities that just allowed me that bigger platform.
Yeah. And talk to me about getting your social right, like particularly the branding and the messaging, to make it connect with an audience. Can you talk us through your kind of experiences there, how you've been able to do that?
Yes, it was a hard learn, I would say, because when you think about all these channels, when you think about your email marketing, your SMS, your website, social, in-person activations, retail, these are all various channels where you have the ability to utilize different voices of your brand. So it's not always going to be that same messaging and same branding across all these different platforms, because most of the times you're reaching different parts of your audience. So figuring out our different voices while still maintaining the integrity of the brand messaging and our brand mission was definitely very hard. And it took a lot of experimenting and testing. But that was something, it was like how we show up in our email is not how we show up on social. Figuring out for us, I was like, I want our voice to be like your best friend who's super into beauty, but also happens to be a dermatologist in your friend circle. So it's kind of like you guys get together for cocktails and you might be like, so I have this pimple, can you take a look at it? And your girlfriend's like, okay. You know, it's like you want that kind of familiar voice talking to you, because for us, I was like, even though it's skincare infused makeup, I don't want to go clinical. I don't want to go super clinical where we're scaring people off. I don't want to go, even though it's makeup, super playful or too young, or where people don't take it serious, the benefits that we're talking about. And the audience that we're speaking to with acne and eczema prone skin doesn't take it serious. So finding that balance and how to convey that is going to be like your magic sauce. And that's really what's going to elevate you to all those different levels.
Yeah. And talk to me about, like, you said that you built a social presence before you launched the brand. Did you use that as a way to kind of validate your product as well? Like, how much were you speaking to that community? Can you talk us through that? Because I think there's a bit of secret sauce or magic there as well.
Yeah, I tell any founder, I'm like, you have to launch your social in a landing page with a waitlist before anything. Before you start trying to push out product and you don't even have anyone to push it to, I feel like that's so key. So for me, even in 2024, we still see the same conversations, but I feel like that was at its height, was so many brands were putting out foundation ranges specifically and leaving off the deeper shades. Like, maybe you would see 20 fair shades and then it's like two shades for maybe I was the deepest shade. And so there were constantly comments and conversations on Reddit, which I tell people, I'm like, Reddit is incredible for discussion boards. Reddit, Instagram, Twitter, where people are complaining and they're you know, showcasing their emotion behind why do we continue to get left out. I would love to see this color. I would love to see this undertone. I would love to find something that was a hydrate. I would love, why can't I see, you know, Black women or white women who have acne or who have eczema? So I'm just like kind of sitting there, you know, pulling things. And I'm also liking the comment. I might go to that person's page and follow them, and then they come and follow Range, and they're like, oh, this is really cool. I want to know more about this. And so it's dropping those little like breadcrumbs to lead people back to whatever it is you're doing. So if it's on social and you're breadcrumbing them to come back to your profile, and then hopefully they're seeing something on your profile that leads them to the link in your bio, that link in your bio should be it's a lead magnet. So it should take them to some type of landing page that gets them excited, or it should take them to some type of, maybe even if you have like, oh, here's a guide on how to wear makeup if you have breakouts. Want to learn more? Like, put your email in here. You want to have something that pulls them and gets them excited and piques their interest. And so that you have that list and that audience building when you have the product launch. And I think another thing that's cool about that is utilizing that to build your brand. So reaching out to this community and saying, hey, I'm thinking about this bottle with this pump or this bottle. What do you guys like, vote on your favorite? Or, hey, we're down to these 10 shades. Which ones are must-haves? So utilizing them as like, you know, like kind of like they're your investors and they're on your board and they feel like they now have this personal tie-in to support the brand.
Yeah, that's really clever. And tell me about your sample strategy, like the sample kits. How'd that come about? How talk us through that? Because I think that was really clever as well.
Thank you. So I knew due to cost that we were going to be a digitally native brand for a pretty long time before we could venture into retail due to the cost. And something for me, I'm like, people must really hate buying makeup online. Like, that seems like the most difficult thing to purchase, especially when it comes down to shades, like knowing if this is your right shade. So we had something, we had a quiz that you could find your shade. We also had a shade finder where you could drop down other brands, Fenty, NARS, Estee Lauder, and it would tell you what that shade was in our shade. But I was like, we need to take it a step further and give them something they could have and test at home with. So I created, first we had individual sample pots that I initially started off giving away. They were free. You could just order up to 3 free samples. Then I started charging, I don't know, I think maybe like $1 or $2 to cover the material costs of like the pot, the little pots that we were selling, and to cover shipping. And then from there, I said, I want something that is nicer and gives you an experience at home. That, you know, when you go to the store and you're shade swatching and you're trying to figure out in the lighting if this is perfect and you don't know, giving you that experience at home where you could dictate, you know, let me go outside, let me go into the bathroom, let me figure out truly what the best shade is. And so we broke our shades down into ranges. So each kit comes with 4 to 5 shades, different undertones. You order the kit. You test it out, and then we give you a coupon or discount code. So you get now it's like $8, I believe. You get $8 towards a full size foundation. So you find your shade, you have $8 to now use back towards your full size. And that was just, we didn't see any other brands doing it. It was absolutely something special to us. Now we see brands have their sample kits. I'd like to say we might have started a movement, but. Yeah, it was something so cool, and people loved that they got this discount code to come back and purchase the full size. And so that has been a really big push for us, especially with being .com only.
Yeah, no, it's such a brilliant idea, because anyone that buys a sample kit, it's like that first step, but it's a bit of a taste tester. Like when I interviewed Neil Patel, he believes one of the best things that you can do for your e-commerce brand is effectively find a way to give product away for free. Now, you're not exactly giving it away for free fully, but it's a very, very low barrier to entry. And then you can obviously do email follow-up campaigns. You can do all sorts of things, because that person is raising their hand. They're a pretty warm potential full-time customer with you.
Mm-hmm. And it's also something to think about, where I was like, okay, how can we go beyond you just purchasing this for yourself? So then we pushed an initiative where you could purchase that in a gift card if you wanted to gift someone with it, if you knew a makeup lover in your circle. So thinking of other ways where it's like, yes, we hope this person's ordering it for themselves, but making it that easy entry too, where it's like, oh, I know someone who might enjoy this. How do I get this to them in a way that makes sense too?
Yeah, I love it. So, Alicia, you're an absolute superstar.
Oh, thank you.
And I know that people will be watching this right now. They'll be thinking, wow, like it seems like everything she touches turns to gold. Tell me about what hasn't worked. Tell me about some of the tough times. Tell me about some of the experiences where you're like, you know what, this is so tough. I don't know if I can do this. Because every founder has this.
Oh, absolutely. So as you mentioned earlier on, we were bootstrapped for a pretty decent amount of time. And with being bootstrapped came us like we were very organic. We were filling bottles on our own and hand labeling them and shipping them. So it wasn't until 2021, I believe, that we were actually able to rebrand and get custom packaging that had our name printed on the bottles and, you know, to do a larger run. Whereas before we would do smaller runs. So we would run out of product very quickly. And we had to figure out how to alleviate that because we would receive feedback that's like, hey, if I can't shop with you consistently, then I'm going to take my business elsewhere. So we had to figure out how to navigate that while we were still very small and doing small order runs. Another thing was figuring out where are we getting this additional capital from? Like, I'm already taking the profits from rings that come in and putting it back into the business. Where am I getting this additional capital? I know I want to go into retail. That's so expensive. How do I build out my team? How do I do all of these things? And at the time, we were way too early for VC, still even too early for angel investors. And so I had to focus on pitch and grant competitions to get that capital. And then, you know, fast forward when we did feel like, okay, we're hitting these milestones. Let's raise this money. It did feel like the goalposts kept getting moved where VCs would think, is there really a need for that? Have you really established longevity? So constantly having to prove, I think, especially as a Black founder, when you have something that targets or prioritizes the Black community, it is tougher in the capital landscape, certainly sometimes in the retail landscape, to find partners who believe in your mission and believe that your audience will show up and show out with their money. So even today, I'm still constantly having to prove myself. I feel like constantly having to prove the worth of myself as a founder, the worth of our brand, which isn't easy. But I think, you know, that's something that you take on as a founder. It's not going to be, you know, a fun up, we're always going up, No, you're going to, it's a roller coaster. And having to get to that point where you kind of balance out, because I was someone who I would really feel those highs and I would be high. And then I would also feel those lows and I would really take those so personal. And finding that middle ground and, you know, not letting too many people deter you from what you're building is really important.
Thank you for sharing. I have to ask a follow-up there. What makes you feel worthy as a founder?
For me, it was honestly, I felt worthy. I had to touch back to you took something in your mind and you brought it to life. When there are so many people who are unable to do that, could choose not to do that, like that is not an easy feat at all. You know, being an entrepreneur, it's not for the weak at all. And so I think I'm like, I had to find worthiness in stepping out of my comfort zone and even deciding to launch something that I didn't even have any experience with. And so I think it started there. But then seeing the traction that I've accumulated over these years, again, as someone who does not have a background in this business and has, you know, had to use like Google and YouTube University to figure out things, like that is like, I've overcome so much. You know, it's like so many businesses, I think it's like the statistic is they shut down within the first like 2 years or something. And so now to be here and thinking about being so terrified of leaving my job in 2019, and now I've been a full-time founder for going on 4 years. It's like all these things that I'm doing for myself make me worthy.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. So We have to work towards wrapping up. I could speak to you all day, and I know that people would be loving this interview. We're going to move to the hot seat round. Rapid fire questions and answers.
Yes.
What e-commerce tools do you use daily in your business?
Ooh, Notion and Slack.
What's the biggest challenge you're facing in e-commerce right now?
Raising capital, biggest challenge.
Okay. What's the best piece of advice you've received about e-commerce?
There's nothing too silly or whatever, to try. Try anything. This is the best place to experiment is through e-commerce.
What's the best piece of advice? What advice would you give to someone hoping to start an e-commerce business?
Ooh, don't go into it thinking that you need, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Go into it first on the ground level and actually see if you have an idea that's worth generating a service or product for. Start small, build slow and steady.
And then lastly, if you were to start again from scratch, what would you do differently?
Wow. You know what? If I were to start again, I would bring on a team sooner than I did.
That's a common one.
That's a very common one, and it's a very true one. As soon as you're able to, start expanding your team and think of unique ways you can do that. It doesn't always have to be a large salary. Think about, freelancers, contractors, think about small equity exchanges. But as soon as you're able to or need to, start building out your team.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Alicia, thank you so much for this incredible interview and being part of this summit. I know everyone watching and listening would have taken so much away from this. Thank you again. Congratulations on all of your success thus far. And I'm excited for us to do more with you at Founder and get you to help our community at a much deeper level. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This is great, Nathan.
If you love this episode, make sure to check out my interview with Emma Greed on how solving a problem she was so passionate about led to the creation of Skims and Good American.
And so I do think it's so much of it starts with addressing things that bother you, that you find, you've got to create a solution for, because, at the end of the day, you've got to be passionate enough and sometimes crazy enough to go round and round and round to actually solve a problem.